Hello. In this audio snippet, we're going to continue talking about the futility of useless service. And as we've been talking about this, it's been intermingled with talking about Black America and also talking about the death of Black America. And that's because those three topics are interrelated, and in some ways, they are. To a certain extent, like sides of the same building, different views or sides of the same core problem or the same building, shall we say. So we're going to continue going through the stories that we have been sharing, news stories, because they are a testament to what's going on in the country and why. We are on our way to dying in less than 7 months as a nation. And by dying, we mean that the promises, the mantle, the hope that had been placed on this nation will be taken away, and America shall be no more. The promises of what was to come will be taken away from this country. And it doesn't mean that the country will suddenly die, that everybody will be dead in 7 months, physically, literally. It will seem like any other day, but the death will come, and very few people will realize it. And I believe there will be some sort of manifestation, something that will confirm that death having happened on that day. But most people will remain unaware of it. And will continue with their lives thinking that everything is okay when the hope will have gone and the country will then enter into a period of decline. I think it's going to be slow at the beginning, just out of mercy for the few people in this land who did care about the truth. But eventually, we will decline. I would dare say over a period of 30 years. It might be less. I don't know. I have no clue. But eventually we will become a third world country. America will be a quote wealthier version of a pathetic third world Latin American country or Hispanic country. That's kind of how what we will it will become. And the relevance of the country at the in the world at the in the world stage will disappear. We will become a mediocre nation without resembling in any way what we once were, and never achieving what we were supposed to become. And I feel like it feels useless. Speaking of useless service, it feels a little futile to be talking about all these things knowing that the country's going to die anyway. So that begs the question, why even talk about any of this if it's pointless? But I feel in a certain way as if it's as if we are part of the small group of people who are giving the closing arguments. It's as if America's on trial and is about to be sentenced to death. By a jury, shall we say, and it's as if a few of us who are trying to speak the truth or speak according to the truth are giving the closing arguments on why America is going to be sentenced to death. And the arguments need to be made. It's as if the testimony has to be given out, and then the country will die. So it seems like a futile exercise, but there is a point and a purpose to it. So we were talking previously about some beatings that have been going on in schools. And we were specifically talking about a Florida student who knocked out and pounded on an unconscious teacher into the floor simply because the teacher took his Nintendo game away from him. And we talked about this. This is a 17-year-old black kid, 6'6" tall, which I think in the metric system is around 2 meters. So he's 2 meters tall, and he weighs 270 pounds. So that's like it's almost 20 stone. So big, heavy fellow, and just 17 years old, a huge guy, and the teacher took the game away from him, and she was walking away, and you can see it in the video because there was like maybe some sort of security system or in the hallway, and the camera captures him going after her with her back turned to him. So she's just walking away from him, and he goes running from behind and hits her in the head. That drops her straight to the ground. And when she's on the ground, unconscious, he continues beating on her like a machine gun, pounding with this vertical motion with his fist, just pounding away at the poor woman. And he even spit on her later. so he punched her and left her unconscious and spit on her. And then he said that when he came back, he would kill her. So that's, and this all happened in a school called Matanzas or Matanzas High School in Palm Coast, Florida. And as we said before, Matanzas in Spanish, Matanzas means killings or massacres. And it's kind of a figure of what happens on a daily basis in Black America. And by the way, this was an attack on a white teacher by this black student. So we talked about that, and then we mentioned how there was this story that came out later about a mental health advocate that posted some videos trying to defend this kid. Saying it's it's a mental health issue. This is not the child's fault, you know. And interesting how she refers to him as the child, 17-year-old kid, 6'6" tall, 270 pounds, but he's a child. And she said he's not a threat. And we talked about this and how sad it is that these people, and this mental health advocate is a white lady, and she looks like a diehard liberal. She has that crazy look on her face. There's a video of her on the Daily Mail story. It's sad to see how these people in their minds have to keep defending unrighteousness because they don't want to face the truth. After we recorded the previous audio snippet, I started thinking to myself, well, could it really be a mental health problem? And yes, there is a mental health element to it, but I kept saying to myself, no, there's something deeper here because this is a manifestation of a pattern of behavior in the Black culture. And that's what this mental health lady refuses to see. And I kept saying, well, but maybe it is a mental health issue. And I was having this debate in my mind. And then I began to remember all these stories that you read so often about like a lady that starts beating up on a McDonald's employee or a chicken fried chicken restaurant employee. Because they forgot to include the fries in the order, or they put the wrong sauce, or they didn't give her the hamburger she wanted because it was not available at that time, and they just launch into this physical violence, physically assaulting and beating up the employee just because of a silly thing, and. Every time I read a story like that, you know, it's like I go scrolling down the story and okay, yeah, it's as if I'm waiting for it. And eventually either they say it literally or they show a picture of the assailant, the person assaulting the employee, and it's almost always a black person. It's almost always a black person. And I said to myself, yes, there's a problem in that, in the culture, in the black culture, where people are taught to demand, like a little child. And if they don't get what they want, they will resort to physical violence, and it's accepted. It is embraced in the culture, or tolerated to the point that it just festers and it infects a lot of people. And this black kid, whether he has mental health issues, I don't know. But the thing is, whatever is in him, it is a manifestation. He's reflecting something that's in his environment. You can't just say, oh, mental health, and that means he's going to be violent because of it. No, he's reflecting something. He's being moved by something. And so I would say to this lady, well, if this is a mental health issue, do you think it's a mental health issue when a black lady assaults a McDonald's employee because she didn't get the fries that she wanted? And it happens over and over again. That means there's something in the black culture that it has basically taught people a sense of entitlement. If they don't get what they want, they have the right to pillage, to riot, to loot, to destroy, and act in violence in protest against not getting what they wanted. That's why whenever something happens, then black people go out and riot and loot and do all these horrible things, and everybody seems to look the other way and accept it, because there's a problem in the culture, and no one wants to recognize that problem. And as I was thinking about all of this, shortly after the recording of the previous audio clip, it's as if sort of confirmation. I don't know if it was immediately after the audio, after the recording, or shortly afterwards, a few hours later, but I stumbled on this headline, it said, I'm reading this from the Gateway Pundit, and the headline says, not the Onion. And when they say that, it's meaning not, this is not from the Onion headlines. I think there's a website called the Onion or something that posts these fake headlines, but it's just for comedic purposes. So they take a real life situation and just create a fake headline just to make fun of things. But this is not an Onion headline. So it says, not the Onion, outraged Georgia woman plows her car into Popeye's restaurant because they forgot her tasty biscuits. So as I'm, you know, when I saw this headline, I said, let me guess, what race could she possibly be? There is chicken involved, and there is a complaint about, there's a violent reaction to not getting her order. So I started scrolling down the story, and lo and behold, you know, there was a video of it, and I found that she, you know, she was a black lady. So the thing is that this is to prove the point that there is a problem in the culture. It's accepted. There's a culture of violence, and the sad thing is when these things happen, when they act out in violence like that, many times it's in violence against black employees, or sometimes Hispanic employees. Many times it's white employees. I think they even get more outraged when it's a white person who does them, quote, wrong. This is a confirmation of the underlying problem that we have. And then this mental health person says, oh, we have to provide more services. We have to provide more mental health, this and that, because these people are not victimizers, they're victims, and blah, blah, blah. And it's that futility of that useless service, because these kids are not going to to change. And interestingly, in the video of when they arrested the kid, because he eventually was arrested. It took a while, but he got arrested. And when he was arrested, what he said was, they handcuffed him and they said, "You're going to prison." And then he said, I don't want to go to prison. And he said, "Bleep you." And I'm not gonna say exactly what he said, but he said, "Bleep you. I don't want to go to prison." He said, and then as he was being handcuffed, he said, "I have more important things to do." So these are not the words of a person who is not all there, in the sense of being mentally incapacitated. It's a person who has a will, a person who has a an awareness of what he is doing, and you cannot blame it on a mental health issue. He's just acting out. He's channeling and willfully channeling the evil that he is surrounded with. There's something in the environment, in the Black culture, that has allowed all these things to happen. And Black America can never, never, ever achieve anything until it removes it. And it will never remove it, because it does not want to recognize how corrupt it has become. And no one, very few people have the bravery to speak out against it, because if you do, you are a racist. So the racism card becomes this barrier of protection to prevent people having to look themselves in the mirror. As we've said before, I think, the Michael Jackson song that says, "I'm starting with the man in the mirror, I'm asking him to make a change." And then he says, "If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change." And that's what Black America refuses to do. And that's why I believe in many senses, Michael Jackson was a visionary who despite his flaws — he had many flaws, obviously — but he had a purpose on in this world of confronting what was wrong with the Black culture. The sad thing is that he only went so far because he was a little bit like Damar Hamlin, afraid to lose popularity or the love of people. He cared so much about that he only went to a certain extent. But if you listen to many of his songs, he does seem to sometimes speak out against these things, even if he's doing it unconsciously or subconsciously, like the song "Black or White" and things like that. But the thing is that no one wants to say anything. And the sad thing is, if you love Black people and if you love Black America, this is the thing you need to do. Because if you love somebody, then you're going to set them free. How do you set them free? By giving them the truth, because the truth will set them free. And by giving them the truth, you're actually showing love. When you hide the truth, that's when you are actually not loving the person. And so the people who claim to love Black America don't say anything, because they're afraid of being criticized. And speaking of that, there was this story a few days ago, and I'm reading again from the Gateway Pundit, a headline that says, "USA Today drops Dilbert over creator Scott Adams' online commentary about race relations." Scott Adams, he is this cartoonist who does the Dilbert cartoons. And he said in a tweet, he said, "White people should, quote, get the hell away from Black people." And a lot of people, including Black people, started hating on him. But it says, Adams also said he moved to an area with a, quote, very low Black population. And he said, quote, it makes no sense to help Black Americans if you're white, because he says Black people don't want white people's help. So even if you want to reach out to black people, they don't want the help. So you better stay away because they will not respond to your desire to help. He said here, and I would say based on the current way things are going, the best advice I'd give to white people is to get the hell away from black people. Just get away. Because there is no way of commingling or coexisting, because black people have this deep resentment against white people that will never go away. No matter what white people do, it will never be enough, because black people are acting like little kids, like the 6'6" inch thug who resented having his Nintendo taken away, because they live in a culture that has no boundaries, no limitations. It's like if you watch TV shows like shows by Cesar Millan, people who are dog trainers, you will know that many times a dog becomes very violent or starts doing all this bad behavior because the owner of the dog doesn't give it boundaries and limitations, doesn't teach it leadership. So the dog becomes the leader and the human becomes the follower, and then the dog just starts acting out. And people say that the problem is with the dog. Yeah, there's a problem with the dog. But it all starts with the human who doesn't provide the energy of leadership to the dog, and provide and establish boundaries and limitations, and that's what's happening in the black culture. There are no boundaries, no limitations, no one telling anybody this is right, this is wrong, these are the boundaries, thou shalt not cross this boundary. Because there are no father figures. It's a matriarchal culture. And as we've said, the word matriarchal is more than just referring to women being in charge. It's more than that, because as we have tried to explain 100 times, our society is matriarchal, even though we are living in a society where most of the quote leaders are physical men. But they act like women. And the matriarchal nature of the culture has to do with the domination of the two feminine personalities of server and organizer. When those two control society, then we have a matriarchal society, even if men are not literally leading. But in the case of Black America, it is almost literally women who are in, quote, charge, because most families are single mother families raising kids without a father figure. So these kids grow up without a sense of being told you can't do that. So when somebody suddenly tells them you can't do that, they don't know how to react to it. They react with anger, as if to say, how dare you not, how dare you tell me that I can't do that? And I think I shared with you in some very early audio clip that one day here, you know, where I live, I was walking and I was waiting to cross the street. And as I was waiting to cross the street, these two black women came towards the opposite corner, and they were eating something. And one of them just threw the whole tray or whatever that she had on the ground with the paper bag, just threw it as if to say, I don't care. And there was a trash, rubbish bin, like 5 or 10 feet away from her in the corner. She could have just dropped it there. Maybe there was no trash bin, but there was one nearby. I know that there was at least one. There were two within 100 yards of that place where I was crossing. But the thing is, she just threw it down, and there were two black women, and they were right in front of me, and I got outraged when I saw that. So they eventually crossed, and I waited on my side, And when they crossed and went, as they went past me, I said, "Shame to you! Shame to you for doing that!" And I pointed to the big pile of trash that she just so carelessly. She did it on purpose. It wasn't like she dropped a napkin without seeing it. It wasn't that sort of thing. She deliberately threw this whole pile of trash on the ground. And when she heard, when the woman who did that heard me say that, she went right at me and in my face, and she started like looking at me. I am of short stature, so she was taller than me. She was looking down on me like a thug. And her friend was right behind, like looking a few feet behind her. And this woman came to me and started calling me the N-word. "You N-word, and you don't tell me what to do." And then I started shouting at her. And I knew I had to do it because I wanted to call attention. I wanted to make a fuss to have people notice what was going on. Because if I didn't do that, then she would feel more emboldened to attack me. And I said, "Okay, what do I do now? Because if she starts punching me, I'm going to have to punch back. And I've never punched a person in my life, much less punch a woman." But I said, "Okay, if it comes to that, I'll have to defend myself." And she would not take the criticism. And I started cursing her, but not cursing in terms of using curse words. That's not what I mean. I started cursing her life and cursing everything about her. She was waiting for a provocation. She was waiting for me to do something because I could feel that she saw that she was taller than me. She was this big black woman, and she young but taller, and she looked mean. There was a certain thuggishness about her, and she was waiting at the first provocation to swing at me and attack me. And because she saw the anger with which I was confronting her, that probably was unusual to her to have someone who was not black speak to her like that. Because they know, they feel that protection, that their blackness is a protection, like some sort of a diplomatic immunity card that they carry around. And if anyone violates that, then, they can say racism. So they're not used to being confronted. But she saw the authority with which I was confronting her, and I think that also held her back. And I was also being, you could say, protected by someone that she couldn't see. But the thing is that eventually she walked away, and as she walked away, I said, "Curse at you, you subhuman." And I shouted it so that everyone would hear it, and I know that everyone who heard it must have thought, "Oh, this guy is a racist." But I'm not white looking. I'm maybe 40% white, but I'm not white looking. I'm not what you would think of as a typical Anglo-Saxon. If you looked at me, you would know what I mean. So I know that, and that also confuses people when they hear me talk like that, because they don't know how to react to me, because I'm not your typical KKK skinhead type person. So they don't know this person saying these things. How do I take it? So because I don't fit any stereotype that they have. So she walked away. And my point in telling all of this is this problem that Black America has, that Black America refuses to be told what to do. Anytime anyone confronts her, they get offended and say, "Hey, what about my diplomatic immunity?" Now that we have talked about that, we want to change topics a bit. We're still in the same concept of the futility of useless service. See, useless service is service that just provides therapy but does not deal or tries to provide superficial therapy, superficial service, but does not deal with the root issues. Because to deal with the root issues, you have to execute or act in a male personality. You have to act as a judge. You have to act as a visionary. And you have to act as a conqueror. If you don't have these three qualities, these male qualities, and this doesn't mean you have to be a man to exercise them. They are male qualities, but you can be a woman and exercise them. Just think of Margaret Thatcher and people like that. So the thing is that if you don't inject those elements into the work you're doing, it's futile service. It doesn't do anything. So while the mental health advocate, whatever, is saying, oh, this is just a kid, he's not a threat, even though I think he had already attacked other people before, that's futile. It doesn't deal with the root issue. And to deal with the root issue, you have to judge it. You have to confront it and say, this is wrong, and this is for your sake. And then not only judge them, but also give them a vision of what they can achieve if they turn their life around. I, in my life, have always wanted to, and if you go to the website where these audio clips are posted, you will see that we for many years, talked about the promises for Black America, what America, Black America could achieve, the visions that were there for them to seize on and follow, but they chose never to go by that. So now let's talk a little bit about what happened in, speaking of futile service, there was this story on Axios.com, AXIOS.com, and the headline says, Scoop, House GOP plans Ohio derailment hearings. And when I saw that, I said, oh, quick, how futile. We were talking in the previous audio clip about how Trump went to East Palestine, Ohio, where there was this recent derailment of a train that had a lot of toxic chemicals, and it just created this kind of mini Chernobyl type situation in that area. And the Bite Me regime couldn't have cared less, because most of the people in that town are, I think it's 90% white. Most of them are fervent Trump style supporters. So Bite Me just could not care less about them, because Bite Me and the Democrats are of the persuasion that if you do not agree with us, we will punish you. Any political anyone who disagrees with us politically is an enemy, and we will punish you, and we will torture you, we'll smear you, and we'll destroy you. That's the Democrat mentality. So to them, East Palestine lives do not matter because they vote Republican. So this is how evil these people are. The thing is, Trump showed up and did the photo op and handed out did the service, the futile service of handing out Big Macs. And we talked about how useless that is. And then I saw this headline the next day after the recording about this GOP House, the Congress people in Republicans in the House of Representatives planning to do hearings. And I said, what's the point of hearings? Ever since I was a kid, I've always wondered, what is the point of congressional hearings? Because they always seem to be this big theater that doesn't achieve anything. All these people being subpoenaed. And I hear time after time, when the liberals are subpoenaed and they stand up before the hearing and they lie, they outright lie under oath, and nothing happens to them. Theoretically, if you lie under oath to Congress, you can be sent to jail. And if I was a congressperson and someone lies to me right in front of me, I would say, hey, officer, please come and take this person to jail. I would have no mercy with these people who just lie. And you can see how they know they're lying, and they just do this bold-faced lying, looking the person straight in the face and lying. And even when they are told, you said this 10 days ago. So they ask them like a trick question, and they lie. And then the person says, hey, you said 10 days ago this. which contradicts exactly what they just said, and they just don't do anything about it. So these hearings are always useless. Most of the time, they're useless. They're just theater. And I said to myself, if I was a congressperson, okay, I see that Bite Me is not doing anything to help these people in East Palestine. The EPA is dragging its feet, an executive branch agency. Then what I would do, if I'm in the House, the Republicans supposedly control the House. Okay, let's pass a bill and let's force the EPA to do this, 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 and that. Just like they pass so many bills nowadays, authorizing billions of dollars of arms and everything and resources to Ukraine, why not pass a bill like that? Say, hey, we're going to allocate, because they like to dish out money like crazy, so why not do it in a situation where it really is needed? Let's dish out, $5 billion in resources and say the EPA has to send this, this, and this within X number of days. And some would say, well, that's a transgression because the legislative branch cannot interfere with the executive branch. Well, the EPA was created by the legislature. It exists because it was authorized in some bill some stupid time ago. So, and the EPA was created by this, and we've briefly talked about this before, the problem in the Constitution, that there is no clarity of the limitations or the boundaries of the executive branch. So, unfortunately, Congress has been creating these executive offices or agencies that start legislating through regulation. They start issuing, the FDA regulates, issues these regulations, the Department of Transportation issues all these regulations, and all these rules that come out, they are law, because if you don't abide by them, you get penalized. So these agencies start legislating. So they start encroaching on the legislative branch. And why is that? Because there's no clarity in the Constitution of what the executive branch really is about. Is it just to execute the laws passed by the legislature, just as the name says? Or is it more than that? And we will hopefully, or maybe someday, talk about what the new American Constitution would have defined as the exact nature of the executive branch. But the thing is that the executive branch gave life to the EPA, and now the EPA is dragging its feet, not executing the function for which it was created. Then the Congress should have the authority to kick the EPA's butt and force it to send resources and do this, this. And it should have happened within 3 or 4 days, as they saw that Bite Me was not doing anything about it. They should have just go ahead and done it and passed a bill and said, okay, just like we send $10 billion of money and weapons to Ukraine in a heartbeat, why can't we do that to send resources and help to East Palestine? And if the EPA doesn't want to do it, then the Congress should be able to hire a private organization to do the EPA's job, and then to pass a law criminalizing the EPA for having failed its duty. These things can be done very quickly, and that would be useful. This is futile, and it's just grandstanding instead of doing exactly what needs to be done. And one thing that, speaking of East Palestine, I was thinking, why did this happen now? Why did this train derailment happen in a place called East Palestine? And I feel like it's a figure of how America didn't make it across the Jordan, because Palestine is the name given to the territory, that is on the other side of the Jordan, the so-called, Promised Land. And the Promised Land is supposed to be an Israel, a new Israel. And as long as Israel is not there, it's a Palestine. And East Palestine, is actually like further inland from the Jordan, from the River Jordan. So the fact that this derailment happened there and that this whole place got contaminated, it's almost like a figure of how that place that America is going towards is gone, has been devastated. If you catch my drift, we were supposed to cross the River Jordan into a Palestine and turn it into an Israel kingdom, shall we say. And that promise is gone. That land is being wasted away because we are not crossing the Jordan. So the promises that are ahead of us, represented by this East Palestine, have been destroyed. And I think that's why it happened. And I was reading this story. The website is substack.com. So it's contra.substack.com. And the title of the story is "The Poison Train, East Palestine, and the Derailment of Norfolk Southern 32N. And it's written by a fellow named Pedro Gonzalez. And it's a very interesting story if you want to read it. It's very long, but it's very, very detailed. A detailed account of everything that happened and what happened afterwards. And it's interesting to note here that it says that Norfolk Southern has been lobbying both Republicans and Democrats and giving money and all that. And they're also very... they act like they're very environmental, and you know they talk the Democrat talk, but they give to both Republicans and Democrats to promote deregulation of the train system. And it's interesting to me how this fellow talks about all the problems that happened during the Obaster time, the Trump time, and then now the Bite Me time. And because even during the Trump years, there was deregulation going on of trains and stuff. And it's interesting to me that this fellow mentions these three regimes, because these are the three people that have been in the White House since the death of the American Republic. On November 5th, 2008, we have said the American Republic, founded by the founding fathers in 1776 or 1788, whatever you want to refer to, that republic died on that morning, on November 5th, 2008. And there has been no president living in the White House since then. So we've only had an imposter that was Obaster, a naive king, or a naive and self-centered king, Trump, and then now we have a thief, who stole, you know, the elections, and that spite me. So we have an imposter, a naive and self-centered king, and a thief. And we will never have a president in the White House again, especially now that the country's about to die. And so it's interesting that this story talks about these three people representing, you know, how, since the moment the American Republic died, we have been on this train ride to the destruction of our East Palestine promise, because we're not crossing the Jordan, so the promise is being destroyed. Like, you know, if you're not going to use it, it will be taken away from you, sort of situation. And the thing that drew my attention as I was scrolling down this very long story, is that, you know, there's a store window that has a sign that says "East Palestine Lives Matter," which is interesting, and also there's a blackboard kind of thing outside the store, and where they wrote, "Please pray for EP." In other words, East Palestine, and our future. These are very, you know, I'm sure a lot of them are Christian people and so forth, and they're praying or asking for prayers for East Palestine and our future. And I know this thing about East Palestine Lives Matter, you know, correlates with everything we've been talking about Black America. Black America has a lot to do with the destruction of this country. As we've said a million times, Black America was supposed to be on the watchtower, and they were supposed to tell us about the things to come. And if Black America had spoken out the truth and said it to white America, but not the nonsense they speak, the actual truth that they needed to hear, then we would not be in this situation. But Black America was too busy being self-absorbed and doing its thing and justifying its culture and its lifestyle, that it didn't do its duty, and now it's dying with the rest of the country, because you know they're in the same boat, so the boat goes down, they go down too. But the thing is, as I was scrolling down, I also saw a picture that I'm trying to get to right now. It's such a long story, but here we go. There, towards the end of this very long story on Substack.com by this Pedro Gonzalez, there's this big picture that says, so he took a picture of this poster in East Palestine, and it says, "We are East Palestine. Get ready for the greatest comeback in American history." And you say, oh, wow, that's inspiring and that's hopeful. But to me, it's sad, because there will be no comeback. It just made me think of what we said so many times about how America is like in this football game where by the end of the third quarter, we are down 72-0. And we've said how, you know, I believe in miracles. I believe in supernatural comebacks, because I've experienced them and I've seen them in games and in my personal life. And I know they are possible, but you have to have the right people, like the people who are willing to channel the comeback. And we don't have the team. We don't have the team to do that. We just have a team of morons, just morons. So there is no hope of a comeback. But we're as a people are not aware of that. It's like the conservatives and American Christians are still believing that there is hope, that there is something they can cling to, but there really isn't any hope, because we don't want to deal with the truth, and the people who have the greatest access to that truth don't want to live by it. And so we're in the midst of this, you know, death that we're experiencing. People are trying to find hope in something, and you may have heard that there have been these so-called revivals going on in different parts of the country. For example, there was this story that came out a few days ago on the Gateway Pundit, and the title of it is Asbury Revival: How Did It Happen? Communications Director at Asbury, Abby Laub, joins Rose Unplugged. And so they start talking about this outbreak at this place in Kentucky, I believe it is. It's a college or something, Asbury College or something. And they had this Christian service one day, and the service just didn't end. It just kept going and going and going, and it's been going on for days. I don't know if it's still going on. And people are having this, people are converting and repenting of their sins and doing all this stuff. And people are looking at these stories and say, oh, there's hope. There's hope. And apparently it's not just in Asbury. There's, like, for example, another headline, a few days earlier said on the Gateway Pundit, beautiful, thousands gather for Jesus March revival in Santa Monica in California. And then there was another story here on the Gateway Pundit, beautiful, revival spread to college campuses across the nation. And they talk about Asbury University in Kentucky They talk about I think something that happened at Texas A&M or in the Baylor campus, and so in different places, there's this kind of like revival going on with students and all that, there's another story that says the revival is spreading. Students from Texas A&M are getting baptized in public fountains. And so forth. So you read these stories and you think, well, these American Christians are seeking God and there's going to be a revival and this and that and the other. But I've been reading all of these things, I kept remembering, I started understanding why we were saying before that before the country dies, there's going to be signs of hope. These signs of like, oh, we're coming back to life. And we spoke about terminal lucidity, that phenomenon that happens with people who are about to die. And they call it end of life rally, where people who have been kind of sick for a long time suddenly get better for one day or a few days, and just before they died, and people and their family members are thinking, oh, he's coming back, but he or she is not coming back, and they eventually pass on. And now I understand why we've felt led to talk about this, because that's exactly what's happening right now. And the reason why I know that there is no reality to this is it's not that the revivals are not sincere. I'm not saying that the people who are repenting or doing all these things are liars or whatever. I don't think it's just emotional. So there's an element of sincerity to the whole thing. But the thing is, at the end of the day, none of this is going to be any relevant if there's no change in the matriarchal structure of the American conservative Christian church. What is this going to lead? Because a lot of people say, oh, this is helping the students turn to God and this and then and then. That we want to help them find a church to go to and serve in their churches and their communities. So what are they doing? If these people are really converting or changing, they're going to be recruited into the futile matriarchal church system, the corrupt church system in America, the Christian church. And whatever sincere revival or awakening happened to them is going to die off. Remember 9/11. After 9/11, everybody was going to church, everybody was praying, everybody was talking about God. And what happened? The corrupt church system saw it as an opportunity to get in more people and to get more people to do their futile service, working in their soup kitchens and cleaning the place after services, and all this futile Sunday school service work and all this. And then the whole thing died. So as long as there's no substance behind the revival, it is futile. It is dead. Remember, if you're a Christian, think about what happened with the Protestant Reformation. Did the Protestant Reformation start with people with a revival and people like a service? Remember, all these are services. That's why they're called services, and it's not a coincidence. These are futile services. But the thing is, the Protestant Reformation of 1517 start because there was this church service that went on for days and days and days, and people converted and repented and all that. No, and I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with that. But what I'm saying is, why did that Protestant Reformation just transform European civilization and world history? Because it was founded on an idea, on a substantive idea. It was Martin Luther posting 95 theses on the church door and saying, these are the things that are wrong with the church system. This is the corruption that's going on in the church system. And people said, yes, that's true. And that started a transformation, a paradigm shift in people's thinking of what reality was and how to interpret the Christianity and their relationship to their God. It was a foundation of an idea, of a principle. It had a substance. This is emotion.
this is all based on emotionalism. Oh, well, let's get, you know, it's like the cheerleader, you know, let's try a little harder. Let's go team. Let's go team. Let's make America better. Let's make America more righteous. Go, 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 Christian team, go. That's all it is. It is just this emotional, and that eventually wears out. And if there is, yes, and that emotionalism can get people to search for the truth. But if they are not searching for the truth, and it's just the emotion, it doesn't take them anywhere, then it was a useless, futile manifestation. And there are manifestations that have an emotional component that are real. And you can think about what happened in 1906 in Los Angeles. You can look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about. And there was a transformation there, because there was also a fundamental core paradigm shift in 1906. It wasn't just emotionalism. There was something underlying it, but that's too long to talk about. We're not going to talk about that here. But the thing is that what are we trying to do now? We're trying to revive the country. This is what Christians are doing, trying to revive the country, thinking about what happened many years ago. So they go, okay, how did the Second Awakening happen in the 19th century? How did this awakening happen? How have we, you know, had revivals before in the country? Oh, we're going to do it one more time. So it's going back to the same old methods of trying to do something that no longer works, because the truth is demanding that we change the foundation. And if we keep building on the sandy foundation, we're just going to continue collapsing. It may feel like we're getting better, but we're not. And interestingly, in Asbury, this whole thing, this whole phenomenon that's happening there in Kentucky, in that university, happened in 1971 as well. In other words, 52 years ago. So this had happened before in exactly the same way that it's happening now. Where did it get us in 19? You know, it happened in 1971. Did the country get any better? Maybe to a certain extent. I don't know. But it surely didn't save us from the times we're living now. So whatever happened, so in other words, I'm saying this has already been tried. It didn't work. It didn't work in the sense of not producing the fundamental change that was needed. It didn't transform the country. It happened 52 years ago, but we're expecting it to make a difference this time. And we refuse to look into the things that we really need to change. So as long as there's no reference to the matriarchy, any revival now and ever that happens again in the history of mankind will be fake. Fake in the sense of not that it's not real, but in the sense of not really having substance and not really producing anything of substance. It's going to be futile. It's just emotion for a few weeks, months, or maybe years, and then it dies off. All these revivals that have been going on, the thing that happened in Pensacola, remember in the 90s. Where did that get us? Maybe it helped Florida, who knows? You know, maybe that's why Florida is a little better off than the rest of the country. Yeah, but still, it's in Florida where the 17-year-old kid was beating up the teacher. It was in Florida where, I think we talked about this, there was another a group of students beating up a little 9-year-old girl in Cutler Bay, Florida, beating up a 9-year-old girl and her 10-year-old brother. It was in Florida too. What I'm trying to say is these revivals or whatever may seem like glimpses of hope, but they're really, they are terminal lucidity phenomena. America is going to die. The closer we get to that point, the less doubt I have about it. This country is dead. And the sad thing is we're still looking for hope because, you know, that's part of human nature. And conservatives want to cling to that hope because they believe they have the truth. and Christians, and conservative Christians in particular, think that they have the core truth, and all that they need is to get it to be applied or applied again, without changing their understanding. They don't want to admit that they're wrong. And that's why it's kind of sad. There's a story that came out. It's on noqreport.com. And the headline says, Lori Lightfoot's humiliating loss means hope for America's future. And Lori Lightfoot is this evil whore who was the mayor of Chicago. And she just lost in a landslide loss. I think she only got like 17% of the vote. And she ended up in third place, so she didn't make it to the runoff. And the other two Democrats won. So the story here is by a fellow named J.D. Rucker. And I think he's kind of one of those people who is amongst the Christian conservatives, like the closest to getting to the truth when I've read his stories. But sadly, he always falls short. And sometimes I feel like reaching out to him and saying to him, hey, are you willing to listen to this? But I don't think he will listen. I don't know. But the thing is that he sounds very sincere and he questions himself a lot. So there is like this margin of hope in him, but I don't think he would be willing to cross the river Jordan. But the thing is that so he's talking about, well, yeah, this is a sign of hope. Yeah, she lost to two Democrats. It's not like a Republican, a conservative Christian Republican won the mayorship of Chicago. The thing is that he writes that, yeah, I know it's not too much, but it's a sign of hope. And then he writes at the bottom, Lori Lightfoot's loss is America's gain. Many have been losing hope in the notion that poor performance by politicians will result in changes. Chicago may be the first domino to fall in America's favor. At least that's what we hope. And when I read that, I go, my goodness, that's so sad. So sad, clinging to this. This is what they find as hope. Because if they recognize that there is no hope, then they would turn to the truth and say, okay, what did we miss? Clearly what we believe is not doing it, but they're not going to do that because they don't want to do it. So and just to emphasize that, there was another story that we didn't get to last time. It was posted on thefederalist.com, and it's such a sad story. The headline says, we don't need a, quote, national divorce. We need more federalism. And it's this, you know, the person here, David Harsanyi, I don't know how to pronounce his name. He said, Marjorie Taylor Greene says the country needs a national divorce. We need to separate by red states and blue states and shrink the federal government. She tweeted, everyone I talk to says this, from the sick and disgusting woke culture issues shoved down our throats to the Democrats' traitorous America Last policies. We are done, unquote. So this Marjorie Taylor Greene, whom we have criticized in previous audio snippets, she's a Republican congresswoman. And so she's saying, hey, she's also admitting there's a loss of hope. Like, okay, we're done. So she's saying we're done. So now let's divorce. Let's separate red states and blue states. So her solution is not to say, what are we doing wrong as a people? Are we as conservatives missing the point? Instead of doing that, she said, no. We who are conservatives, let's get together and form a separate country. And that kind of sounds like what happened, you know, many years ago with the South saying, hey, you know, we hate the federal government destroying us, so we are destroying our culture and our way of life here in the South, so we're going to separate. So instead of looking in and saying, hey, what have we done wrong? They just want to just isolate and be wrong by themselves and let the others be wrong by themselves on the other side. But so this fellow says, hey, that's not the solution. We need more federalism. So in other words, we need to reduce the power of the federal government and blah, 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 and the things that we've criticized many times, so I won't get into that. But what saddens me about this is that the story on the Federalist.com, you know, has the headline, "We don't need a national divorce, we need more federalism," which means, you know, it's like saying there's a fire and we have poured petrol or gasoline on it, and it just keeps getting worse and worse, and their solution is to put more petrol, which is we need more petrol. We need more gasoline on the fire. That's what's going to put it out. But below the headline, there's this cartoon or rendition of a man with a stick, with a baton or whatever, or a walking cane, and on top of another guy who has a fountain pen, or you know, one of those feather thingies that they used to write with many years ago. And the guy with the cane is on top of this other guy, you know, beating him. And the guy who is being beaten in this rendition has a document in his left hand that says Kansas. And in the background, there are these people, one person kind of stopping others from interfering with the beating, and other people laughing. And I go and I look at this rendition, I go, huh, this sounds very familiar. If you've been listening to to previous audio snippets, I think you know what this is all about. This is the beating of Charles Sumner by that son of a bitch, Preston Brooks from South Carolina. And I go, this is the picture that this David Harsanyi or the website chose to put right below the headline. It's a huge rendition. And I go, isn't this exactly a manifestation of why federalism doesn't work? This Preston Brooks got offended that the guy that he's beating up, Charles Sumner, was telling South Carolina how to live their lives. That he would, because he wanted to end slavery. He wanted, through federal powers, to end slavery in the southern states. But the southern states were hiding behind federalism to protect their slavery. And that's the very picture that he uses to say we need more federalism. I don't know if you see the irony. He's showing what federalism does, what federalism has done in the past, where it led Preston Brooks to beat up on Charles Sumner for daring to tell the states how to run their business from the federal government. And for insulting the South, and insulting state rights, and that led to the Civil War and all this, and how federalism was being used to protect slavery, and that's what he uses to say we need more federalism, and that's how you see the disconnect that these people have, no understanding of the reality. It's as if they can't grasp it. That they're wrong, that their whole understanding is flawed, fundamentally flawed. So anything they do to change things is just useless. It is utterly useless. And that's where we are right now. It's the futility of useless service because people are unwilling to do what needs to be done to correct things. Just for example, just take the political prisoners from the January 6th fiasco. There's this headline that said J6 political prisoner Ryan Samsel, beaten by prison guards, loses vision in one eye. Now he's prevented from speaking with a Gateway Pundit so we can tell his story. This was posted on the Gateway Pundit. So... And then there's another story. January 6th, Jeff Sable goes missing after raising complaints of jail abuse. Please help Jeff by donating below. This was again on the Gateway Pundit. This fellow has been in hell for over 760 days without being convicted of any crimes. And there's another story. Confirmed, as we suspected all along, new video proves Capitol Police on January 6th started firing on the innocent crowd without warning and against the law, injuring numerous individuals. And there's a shocking video of it. This was again on the Gateway Pundit. Then there's another story that says January 6th bombshell. DOJ video shows Capitol Police holding open Upper West Terrace doors on January 6th. Over 250 individuals allowed to walk into Capitol by police, then later arrested and abused. So the video is there, and all these people who are being held and being tortured, being mistreated, and just held for 2 years without, you know, they didn't do anything, they didn't kill anybody, they didn't fire on anyone. All they did was walk into the building with the police opening the doors for them. And then they've been treated like that. And what is the point of me saying this? You know, first of all, I feel sad for these people. These people were there to support Trump, and they should have known better than to support a traitor. Trump is a traitor, a self-serving traitor. We've said before, he should be, if he really cared about these people, he should be in front of Capitol Hill every day, or he should be in front of the jail and demanding to go in and be willing to be imprisoned and put in jail and suffer and lose his political future to save these people if he really cared. But he doesn't. But that's one thing. So these people made a mistake of trying to be loyal to a person who was inherently disloyal to them. So, yeah, I understand it was their mistake, but even so, what they're going through is horrible and unfair. But the thing is, all of this information is out. These videos are out. Everybody knows the police let them in. There's video now clearly showing that. There was video before. There's even more video now. The Republicans control the House. And some of them are holding hearings about it. You know, again, hearings here, futile, useless service. Why don't they just go ahead and why doesn't someone pass a bill demanding, why aren't these Republicans go, at least if Trump is not doing it, why aren't they demanding, you know, habeas corpus or whatever in these prisons and say, where are these prisoners? I want to see them and I demand to see them. And if they don't, you know, provide proper explanation of why they're holding them, why they're torturing them, you know, then why not pass a bill saying we can take these prisoners and move them somewhere where they can be, you know, treated better and be given the proper legal protection that they need? Why aren't they doing anything concrete? It's just words, 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 words. If you hear, complain there, and no one does anything. So it's, again, this futility of this useless service. And the people who have the power to do it don't do it. Trump keeps saying, hey, when I get reelected, which will never happen, when I get reelected, I'm going to pardon all these people. Oh, yeah, so they have to wait. They have to wait, what, 2 more years? Hope that Trump gets elected, and then hope that when he gets there, there's not going to be some sort of legal restriction to him pardoning them. And you have to trust that he will do it, just as he promised that he was going to lock Hillary up, and he never did. Just as he promised he was going to build a wall, and he just dragged his feet in building the wall, the southern border wall. Yes, the Congress stopped him, but we've explained this before. He could have gone around Congress and done it, and still legally done it, and if they wanted to argue, you know, they can argue after the wall is built. You know, it's like, he could have done it if he wanted to. He just didn't want to because he kept listening to Ivanka and Jared and all the traitors that he had around him. So are we going to put our hope in a man who is not to be trusted and wait? No, it's not going to happen. the people who could do something are not doing it. So this Marjorie Taylor Greene, all this pompous talk that she does, and oh yeah, we are going to separate because, you know, we are the righteous ones and blah, blah, blah. She's not doing a damn thing about the January 6th people. Not a single thing. And because she actually thinks that Bite Me won the election fair and square. She has said it before. The whore has said this before. So these are the leading Republicans who are going to take us to East Palestine, to the promised land. No, that's why East Palestine is now toxic. It's a toxic place. There is no hope. There's not going to be the greatest comeback in American history. There isn't going to be. Because we don't have the players to do it. We don't have the people. And what would mean having the players? It's having the people who are willing to say, hey, we need to change the foundation of this country and change it from the bottom up. There's something fundamentally wrong. We just cannot go back to the way we were. We cannot, you know, sing the Barbra Streisand song and go back to the way we were. We can't do that because it's over. And that's why, you know, Republicans, that was a headline saying Republicans embrace early voting. They think this will help them beat Democrats in a corrupt election system in 2024. So they're going to play the game of early voting. And we explained before, that's just going to change. It's not going to change the Republican totals because instead of one Republican voting in person, they're going to send their ballot. And the fact that they're going to send it by mail means that there's more of a chance of the Democrats taking that ballot and switching it to a Democrat vote. And in the meantime, the Democrats are going to keep stuffing the ballot boxes with fake ballots. It's futile. There was another story that said new voter roll maintenance competitor reveals ERIC system obsolete, inefficient, primitive, and untrustworthy. This ERIC system. So the idea is he says it's time for the 50 states to bring trust back into the election system. Omega for America is the answer. This is by Jim Hoft. And this Jim Hoft fellow is very pro-federalism and all that. And now he's saying it's time for the 50 states to bring trust back into the election system. So he's actually agreeing, even though he doesn't want to admit it, that we need something that is applied over all 50 states. In other words, he doesn't realize it, but he's, without meaning to, admitting that it's wrong for each state to be deciding on their own how to regulate their elections. The Founding Fathers made that stupid mistake that we've mentioned over and over again. But he still doesn't get it. He's saying these words, but he still doesn't get, there's a fundamental problem with the Constitution. And we need to standardize the election system at the national level and not let the states do all this local corruption and stealing. Because now every time there's corruption, we have to fight it in each state individually. And each state is controlled, you know, if they're controlled by the Democrats, they're not going to let anything happen in the state. So it's this futility. You know, they think, oh, yeah, we need to do all this work and make a change. But if you don't change the fundamental problem, it's useless. I think that's where we have to stop. And basically, just recognize the country is dying, and we are engaged in a lot of futile service, a useless service that doesn't produce any results because we don't want to admit the truth. And that goes with a story. I think we'll end it with this. There was this headline on the Gateway Pundit again. It says, woke doctor who was vaxxed several times and always masked up has a colossal meltdown after receiving her COVID diagnosis. So she got the disease and she's very sick. And this is a lady who continued using the mask even after it stop being mandatory in many places. She's taken all the injections, you know, all the dosages. I think she's been injected 6 times. I think I'm not sure, but I think I remember her saying that or reading that somewhere here. And so she still got sick, and she still doesn't get it. And she gets angry at people calling her out and saying, oh, she said, the ignorance of around us is shocking. I just spoke to a GP who told me that recent research shows that while masks were important, hand hygiene was by far more important, and that Paxlovid, I don't know what that is, rebound was just spreading the virus in small doses rather than one big dose. So she was criticizing her doctor because the doctor was telling her, research shows that masks are important, but hygiene was far more important. And if you've been reading the post on the website where these clips are posted, the articles, you will remember that we talked about that almost 2 years ago. We said the spread of the disease was not so much by the air, but by hand contact, touching things that were infected, you know, with the virus. That's what spread the disease. And that the key was not to wear masks, but to wear gloves. but that would not have helped the agenda, the Democrat agenda, because the agenda was to instill fear. The mask creates fear, this psychological thing, like, oh, there's this thing that's about to kill us. Whereas a glove is more like, you know, it's more elegant. You look more elegant wearing a glove, wearing gloves than wearing a mask. And that's why that didn't fit the agenda, so they never went that route. But this doctor's now saying this, and I feel like, oh, this is proof that we were not misguided when we were saying that. But she criticizes this doctor, and she's a doctor herself, apparently. And then she says she criticizes people who are now making fun of her for having the disease after. You know, she masks indoors. I think she must be one of those idiots who drives by herself, you know, in her car with all the windows up, and she's still masked up inside, even though she's the only one inside the car. She's that type of idiot. And she criticizes people. Here she says, to the a-holes who are using my getting COVID as some sort of victory to suggest that precautions don't work. If that's what you have to take away from it all, there's really no point appealing to you on rational grounds. You do you. I'll enjoy living rent-free in your head. So this is how stupid people are in this country. Like idiots. And this is on the liberal side, but sadly, we have the same problem on the conservative side. That's why this country will be dead in less than 7 months. I don't know what else to say about that. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll continue talking about Black America, hopefully, and someday get back to the treaty that would have integrated the Dominican Republic. Someday we have to get to that and continue talking about the post-Reconstruction period in America, and see how the Republican Party began to decline shortly after that, leading to the situation we are now. Thank you very much for listening.